Kaya, welcome to The Curb Podcast. My name is Andrew F. Pierce. I'm coming from Boolu, Perth, Western Australia. Sovereignty never ceded. The boxing film subgenre gets an esteemed new entry in the form of Paul Goldman's Kid Snow. Set in the 1970s, Kid Snow follows Billy Howell as the titular character, a washed-up fighter who has won the last shot at glory. Shot in the red dirt of WA, Kid Snow also features an impressive lineup of Aussie actors, including Phoebe Tonkin, Hunter Page Lockhart, Mark Cole Smith, and Nathan Phillips, amongst more. Nadine Whitney spoke to Paul Goldman ahead of the world premiere at the 2024 Sydney Film Festival, with the two talking about Paul's experience of shooting in Kalgoorlie, how he casts the roles, and the allure of the drama within a boxing story. Kid Snow has two more screenings at the Sydney Film Festival on the 14th and 15th of June before it heads west, where it will screen as the opening night film for the Revelation International Film Festival in Perth. Tickets for all screenings are available now, and links are in the show notes. Hey, if you like what we do at The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au to listen to other interviews, to read reviews, and to check out a few other things that we've got going on there. The Curb is a completely independent ad-free website and really does run on the support of listeners and readers like yourself. To help us stay independent, head over to patreon.com/thecurbau to support us from as little as $1 a month. Thank you again for listening, and once more, the screening dates, 14th and 15th of June for Kid Snow and the Revelation International Film Festival in July as well. Tickets, again, are available right now. Here is a listen to the trailer for Kid Snow, followed by the interview with Paul Goldman.
Ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show, 10 years unbeaten.
My brother.
I need somewhere decent to sleep for me and my boy.
There were dads before. Got some great news. Kid's got a fight against Hammer Marina.
Not fought a pro in years.
There's always more than one way to win a fight.
Or he messes me up so bad I never fight again.
Imagine how that would feel.
Okay, Kid Snow. It is a great Aussie yarn. Like, it's one of those stories where you can just feel behind it. It has this almost mythic level of yarn.
Yeah.
And it's co-written by the great John Brumpton from a story of his. Did he present that to you?
No, I had met John many times over my career and had been very close to casting him at different times. So I knew all about John, and I didn't know that at a certain point in his life he had joined a tent boxing troupe, and he had written a script based on his experiences and his research, and he'd taken it to Lizette Atkins, and I think they spent quite a few years developing the project with other writers. And then the project kind of went into a twilight zone for a while. And they approached me and I read it and I loved the material and the characters. And I thought I knew where I could take it. So I climbed on board about 6 years ago. And
It really does have that amazing, you know, the Irish tradition of storytelling and the Australian tradition of storytelling, which is what I really, really worked with. You know, Kid Snow, because we never actually get to know his name other than Kid, do we?
No, that's true. I mean, I guess that was what was attractive to me, is I thought, well, Tent boxing is such a piece of Australian outback mythology that, during the first 70 years of the last century, there were boxing troops traveling, crisscrossing Australia everywhere. And I'd met many people who, when they were younger, had gone to see them. And I thought, well, this has never actually been a subject or a background to any film made in Australia. So that was part of the attraction, but it was also just the characters as well.
Yeah, well, they're incredible characters, and I just love the fact that your main couple here is Sunny and Snow. just that wonderful opposites, but they're so similar. What is it that attracts people, you think, to boxing stories in particular?
Well, I've always had it's certainly it's a genre of a subgenre, I guess people would identify it as, of filmmaking. And there's a rich tradition of it. And of course, films like Raging Bull have been very, very important to me. There's a film by John Huston called Fat City that was made in the early 70s. It's also an important film to me, with a young Jeff Bridges and Stacey Keach. I think boxing films have an enduring attraction for people because it's so primal. And the stories are always about people at their best and worst. And I think that's part of the attraction of them, whether it's Cinderella Man with Mel Gibson, or whether it's,
That was Russell Crowe. I'm just gonna
Russell Crowe, sorry, yes. Or
yeah. Pull
whether.
you up there. We're not going to get our two imports mixed up there,
No,
Paul.
that's right. But there's that great tradition of boxing films that are raw. And as I say, the characters are inevitably both good and bad. There's just such pr prime, and people are attracted just to the violence of those films too, I think, unmistakably.
I think so too, because when I've been watching a few films, like I don't know if you saw The Iron Claw, which was a wrestling film, and also The Wrestler by Aronofsky, and a whole bunch of boxing films. I think that they come out regularly. It's just this idea of people putting themselves on the line in such a visceral manner, willing to be pounded into nothing, or to pound someone else into nothing, but still have some sort of code behind it. And
Also, I think people are fascinated by all those aspects of it, but also just there's always this sense in boxing and wrestling that there's some kind of it's kind of corrupt as well. There's that discussion circles about the moral corruption, and why would you allow people to do this to each other? And certainly we know throughout history there's been plenty of boxers who have had a very self-destructive streak, whether it's Mike Tyson or Jake LaMotta. So, there's this wonderful conundrum about why someone would get into a ring and have their brains knocked out.
And why somebody would want that so terribly, to really do that. And I think that you set up, or well, the script sets up this idea too, of its tradition, and also its poverty. It's what you have to do. Kid Snow could have been a contender. I had that in my head the whole time when I was watching. I could have been a contender. But he's being pushed so heavily by his brother Rory Quinn, who's Tom Bateman just blew me away with his performance. That he's trapped. He has nothing else he can do. He's trapped by guilt, which for something that wasn't really his fault. He's trapped by poverty, and he's also trapped because he has to take care of everybody else in the troop who Rory isn't taking care of.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the attractions of me, was that the sense of the sibling rivalry and the fact, I always described Rory and Kid as being having a being married to one another and having a very, very dysfunctional marriage. I mean, there's on the evidence, there's no other women involved in their life. They're kind of caught in this crazy dance where they feel responsible for each other, but also there's just such a well of bitterness and anger towards each other.
I think that the bitterness is, to an extent, fair on Kid's side. I think Rory has become uniquely twisted in certain ways. So I'm not going to get into the finale, but the finale is quite satisfying in how it works out. Can you tell me about working with the two? I'm going to call them imports, Billy and Tom.
Yeah, it was a difficult film to cast because COVID got in the way and that made it hard. And whenever you're casting, you're looking far and wide, and I certainly there was some Australian actors I was interested in, but inevitably I was drawn to the work of some actors overseas. And Billy Howe, I spoke to Billy a few times and I just loved how soulful Billy was just as a person. And I also thought that he would embody some of the some that soulfulness on the screen. I also the conversation we had was very, very rich about the character. And it was the same with Tom. Tom, they both came to the script very, very passionately. And of course, for Billy, it was going to involve a lot of work before we actually hit the road. So boxing lessons and voice coaching in the UK. I love the fact that both of them were felt to me like they had a commitment to all the visceral aspects of the character. I mean, Rory, Tom knew that he was going to have to be wearing calipers, and Tom wasn't scared of the, and there was a determination not to make Rory into a monster, which was very, very important. So, I found both of those actors very, very challenging with the things they were saying to me. And that's a place I really like going with working with actors.
Yeah, and they do both embody a deep complexity. I'll never find another fighter like you, or a brother. At one point, Kid Snow says, "Or a brother." That's the big point that he wants to make. I'm particularly interested now that we've got our imports out of the way, talking about our Australian actors, working with Phoebe the gorgeous Mark Cole Smith and Hunter Paige Lockhart, Nathan Phillips, who was in your first film, and he's really here, and the glorious Jack Latour, who plays Darcy. Who I think is the soul of the film. Can you tell me about directing these great actors?
So I think throughout my career, I've always been drawn to casting and being meticulous about casting. I think it's pretty evident from my films that I'm not scared to go to places and find new faces, and I'm happy to say launched quite a few careers. I mean, I like actors a lot. I went to NIDA myself, so. And I also went to film school. So that's a place I like actors who are very, very, very challenging. Of course, the history of tent boxing is it runs in parallel with a lot of histories about Indigenous culture
Absolutely.
as well. It was very, very important to get cast those Indigenous actors very, very carefully, and to discuss, because I thought inevitably we're going to have some very, very heavy discussions about the period that the film's set in, and the racism, and I also thought those four actors, Mark Holsmith, Hunter, Shaka, and Nathan, kind of, for me, they're kind of like the heart and soul of the film as well. And so it was a long search. It was wonderful for me to bring Nathan Phillips back into a project of mine, since I'd cast him in Australian Rules. And casting kids is an absolute nightmare. And you see 100 kids, and one of them sticks out. And I was pretty despairing. I couldn't find the kid to play Darcy. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, Anoosheh Zarkeesh alerted me to this kid, Jack Latour. And I got on a Zoom call from Perth to him and his parents. And he was just a sheer delight. He was cheeky. He was confident. I knew that his sister was also acting as well. So that was a very, very important decision, because I think those scenes with Jack are delightful. And then Phoebe, for me, this was always going to be a dangerous piece of casting. I mean, I think it's a very, very demanding role. Phoebe did Kid Snow before she did Boy Swallows Universe. And I think Phoebe came to the film with something to prove. I think she was really up for the challenge. She understood that the role was dangerous, and she wanted to hold on to that danger. It's also a very, very hard role for a was always going to be a hard role for any woman I cast, because the film is set in a world of masculinity, isn't it?
It is, but you're very respectful. Like the film is very respectful for what Sunny does and why. And Betty and Sunny are both extremely powerful women.
Yes,
There's
strong
no
women.
shame involved in, like, to begin with, I think Sunny feels that she doesn't want to see. Doesn't want to have Darcy see her dancing, but after a while she understands that actually that's where her power is, and that's important. So yeah, I think that the film is very respectful for women working in stripping, in exotic dancing. So
Yeah, I mean, I was very influenced by a book by an American photojournalist who's very famous, Susan Mazalis, who put out a book called Carnival Strippers, which has been republished. And this is a young photographer who was going around country fairs in America in the early 70s, and took photos of women who were stripping, and also did audio recordings, interviews with them. That book became a kind of touchstone for us, and for the actors, and for the art department, production design, and wardrobe. And the thing about Susan Mazalis's book is it's also very, very respectful. I mean, that was very important for me to have strong women in the film, strong, determined, feisty women who spoke their minds.
yeah, because it is a very homosocial environment, generally, like the whole boxing thing, they tend to be boxing wives, and that's about it. So to have Sunny be just as powerful and at times more powerful than Rory is I think a great narrative step. So can you tell me about filming in Kalgoorlie? That must have been quite the thing.
Yeah, it was, for me, that was one of the, it was a great experience. I'd also spent quite a lot of time in the previous years just going backwards and forwards to Western Australia. Clayton Jauncey, who was the production designer, had come on very early, and I think his work in the film's incredible. And we decided that we were going to situate the film out in the regions of Western Australia. Kalgoorlie was a place that was convenient for us. There was also a rich history locally of boxing troops having gone through there and also professional boxing. I mean, as you know, Kid Snoke drops you into both those worlds. And in lots of ways, those worlds contradict each other. I mean, tent boxing is kind of carnivalesque and like a circus. And obviously, the world of professional boxing is far more brutal and far more corrupt.
Yes.
But being in Kalgoorlie was an eye-opener as well. I mean, I got to meet quite a few Indigenous boxers who, by the time I was talking to them, were in their 60s, 70s, and some of them 80s. So it was kind of good to do that research. I loved the landscape around Kalgoorlie. It was inspiring to go out into those gold fields, into that landscape. I mean, I thought the landscape would play a very, very strong part in the film. And as the film develops, by the time they hit that kind of third camp, the landscape kind of subsumes the boxing tent.
Very, very much so. I just think it's an incredibly polished piece of work, and as I said, a big yarn. I just felt that strength of being told a great story.
Yeah,
So.
I guess the last thing to say is that was very important to me too, Nadine. That we kind of thought I've felt to myself that we hadn't made many epic Australian films in recent times, and set in those landscapes. And so that was very, very important to me to tell that yarn, but also to have very, very complex characters and complex relationships.
Yeah, and they definitely are. There were times that I was getting quite confused, going, I don't think I would do that, but I can't imagine what it would be like to be Kid Snow, you know. So yeah, it is a fabulous film, and I hope it does very, very well. And it has been a pleasure chatting to you, Paul.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yes, have a wonderful day, and thank you for the film.
Thanks very much, Nadine.
Thanks again to Nadine Whitney and to Paul Goldman for the chat there on the film Kid Snow, which is screening at the Sydney Film Festival on the 14th and 15th of June and will launch as the opening film for the Revelation International Film Festival in Perth on the 3rd of July. Tickets are in the show notes. Thank you again for listening. Make sure to head over to thecurb.com.au to listen to other episodes and support us on patreon.com/thecurbau. We will see you on the next one.